It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. I'll get it out. Jared, a couple of sponsors before we get right to it.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. You can join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can email your questions to us at radio@bleedtechblue.com. Or you can tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTBRadio.
Hoping to have Skip Holtz sometime in the next hour. He'll be between in-home visits. Of course, we're in the nitty-gritty of the final days before signing day on February 4th. So he's supposed to be calling in, hoping to catch up with him. There's a little bit of news going around at Louisiana Tech, and I'd like to get his thoughts on it. But jumping right into recruiting, this past weekend, Tech hosted a lot of players, upwards of 20. And from all accounts, it went as well as you could ever ask. And they even hosted some bigger fish that'll visit some Power 5 schools before signing day, and that's a big deal. One that's committed to a Power 5 in Kendrick Jackson, the linebacker from Hainesville, and then, of course, Kevontae Turpin of Neville, who will visit TCU this weekend and possibly Texas Tech in the final weekend. Jason, overall thoughts of the class, and are they missing any spots?
Well, I don't think they're missing any spots with all the commitments on defense. You know, they had the one decommitment. You touched on that in the last segment on the previous show, but
and he'll visit this weekend.
TJ
King.
This weekend, they got a chance to bring him back in, and you know, like you said, with Coach Giles leaving, that was his recruiter. That's the position coach. You can see where he might get a little cold feet and want to second guess it, but I think having Coach Petrie coming in, that's going to do a lot to get him back in the fold.
And I had a premonition, I guess, a little bit last week, Jared. I think you remember me saying that was really the only one I was worried about.
Yeah, it was. But I do think that him choosing to go ahead and come back and visit this weekend probably means that though he did renege on his commitment to Louisiana Tech and flip to UTSA, I don't think he's solid at UTSA either. Otherwise, he would have said, you know what? No, I'm not going to come this next weekend. I'm solid to UTSA now. Hasta la vista.
Yeah, I think Tech still got a good shot. I mean, as many times as Rick Petrie's been around defensive linemen, he's seen this. And he has – I did text a little bit with TJ today. He confirmed he is visiting, and then also that he had talked to Coach Petrie for the first time yesterday, and the conversation went well, and he just looks forward to talking to him more this weekend. So I think Tech's got a really good shot of flipping him back. He didn't commit to Louisiana Tech the first time for just Coach Giles. There's more to the commitment than one thing.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And so then they're sitting on 22 commitments. You've got probably four targets left. TJ King, you mentioned. Kevontae Turpin, you mentioned. Ephraim Kitchens, another former commitment.
Coming this weekend.
Instead of worrying about Texas Tech or TCU, we're talking about Georgia Southern, Appalachian State. I think Tech's in pretty good shape there, especially given the fact that he's next door in Mississippi, and those two schools are pretty far away. And then the fourth one, help me out, you mentioned Kendrick too. So feel really good about Kendrick. I know he's been committed for a while to Arizona, but his cousin's coming here. He's from right down the road in Hainesville, and you got to think once it comes down to signing his name on the dotted line, Arizona's pretty far away.
And then he is going to visit Arkansas the last week, and if I were to guess, I'd say it's between Arkansas and Tech. I doubt he signs with Arizona.
Oh, no doubt. I think you're right. And Arkansas does come down into North Louisiana some. I know they're already looking at the running back at Spring Hill for next year.
Just like everybody in the country is.
Well, yeah. And, you know, they've recruited in Monroe in the past. So I'm sure they're going to look at Kendrick pretty hard. But yeah, I think you're right. They're more of a threat than Arizona is.
But, you know, there are, of course, photos because of the modern age of recruiting. The photos hit Instagram, they hit Twitter, and you can see the group of players, and you can see how big they are, how they stand next to one another. One thing that I took away probably the most was how big the offensive linemen are. It's been a really long time. Let's go ahead and say this. Since probably Jordan Mills, the Tech has had a high school offensive tackle prospect that's looked like these guys.
Yeah, and then you count the guard that gray started last year, McCready, and you've got some pretty big boys coming in. And that's only going to help because we've got so many junior offensive linemen. So you want to have these guys coming in as freshmen. They're a couple of years behind them, maybe even 3 years behind them if they redshirt. So you can kind of get that next group together and working together the next couple of years and getting ready to take over.
If there was one prospect out of the 20-some-odd that are committed now, who would you say could be the biggest surprise to fans in coming years? Each of you guys, and I'll go as well.
Brandon Derman. I'm just a big fan of Brandon Derman in general. There's been some question about his size, that type of deal. Right now he's sitting at 6'2", 235 pounds.
He's big enough.
He's absolutely big enough. He told me that his bench max is a little more than 285 now at this point. Smart kid, graduated early, coming to Tech early. He's going to enroll early. Only gives him a chance to be able to get a jump start on the system. Gives an opportunity to compete in spring practices and the like. I think Brandon Derman is someone who will play, will see significant playing time, and will perform well at Tech for the next 3 years.
I might steal yours and go with Emmanuel Turner.
It's not going to be mine.
Okay. Defensive end from Magnolia. I don't know. He seems like he's built to be an impact defensive end pretty early. He's not a real skinny kid that's going to have to take time to put on weight. And defensive ends just have a chance to make an impact early, like we saw this year from a true freshman. And so, that you know, put him on the field, stick the quarterback. I know there's more to playing the position than that, but that's a chance for them to get out there and do something that's seen right away. It shows up in those stats.
The biggest surprise to me for the future of Louisiana Tech is Jamarian Johnson out of Ravel. A 6'4", 215-pound. He played outside receiver in high school, moved some inside. If he's 215 pounds as a senior, he could be 250 by the time he's a senior in college. At 6'4", he's got a good speed. If he can hold on to that speed, he's got a chance to be a really good tight end / inside big body receiver for Louisiana Tech. It's hard to really zero in on one or two players. It honestly is.
Well, and that's what this program's needed for so many years was a group of 22-plus high school kids just infusing all that depth back into the program, just good kids, football players. They'll have a lot of them have a year to redshirt. Some of them are going to play right away. But just getting that youth and depth back in the program after so many years of relying on junior college heavy classes and then seeing some players transfer out or not make it, there was serious lack of depth on the program when Skip Holtz took the job. And so this class has been a long time coming, you know, especially with them being a majority on the defensive side, which we never have seen. It seems like the last several staffs have always, you know, gone heavy on offensive line and receivers. And I think, you know, you'll probably see a little bit of a swing next year, and they probably will go more wide receiver and offensive line since they're doing so many defense. They might bring in a couple of JUCOs next year because this class is so young. They might want to get a little bit of experience next year. But this has been a long time coming. They really needed it, and it's going to work wonders in the program. It really will.
For me, there's not a single head scratcher in the list. And in the past, I mean, I can remember the years where there's at least five, and you're like, where did that come from?
Yeah, just taking somebody to take on or fill a position. You know, I noticed I was looking at one of the junior college rosters in Texas, and they had a former Louisiana Tech Bulldog on that roster. I remember when Tech signed him, I'm like, you know, he didn't have a whole lot of other offers and just kind of a average size offensive lineman, didn't have any kind of special athleticism. And, you know, he was here for 1 or 2 years, and now he's back in a junior college. And I was also looking at UTSA's roster after TJ King flipped to them, or their commitment list. And I started looking at some of the huddle film on some of these guys, and I saw one, another defensive player, and his highlight, it seemed like, was just him maybe just being in on a couple of plays and not really making any plays. I'm like, that's their highlight. And no other offers. They kind of reach for a small school kid, and, you know, maybe they're just going for raw potential. But, yeah, you know, Tech's not reaching like that.
Jared, you look at the defensive backs. To me, as a group as a whole, that group probably stands out more than any in this recruiting class. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and it's not as though they were lacking depth at defensive back anyway, but they've continued to bolster what was already a strong position for them. And, of course, I think the biggest addition is Johnny Shaw, you know, three-star DB out of Orange, Texas, 6'1", 190. He's the highest-rated commitment that Louisiana Tech has right now. But outside of Shaw, you've still got guys like Theron Williams out of St. Aug, 5'10", 177 pounds. You've got James Jackson from Haynesville, 5'11", 190 pounds. And you've got Aaron Robertson right out of Huntington.
Player of the year for the Shreveport Times.
Exactly. 5'9", 180 pounds, and he was player of the year for the Shreveport Times. I mean, as far as a position group, I
and
think
– Trey Spencer will be added to that group at 5'11", 160.
As a position group, I think the defensive backs will have. I think they have the best chance to maybe be the best position group from this recruiting class, which, strangely enough, isn't talked about as much because of the lack of depth at defensive line, the lack of depth at offensive line, and those are the position groups that we're always talking about. But the DBs in this class have an opportunity to be very special.
Well, and if you add Ephraim Kitchen, that's just another one.
Right. Agreed.
And Ephraim Kitchen, if you watch highlight tapes, and then we all three of us watch a good bit of them, his tape is really impressive.
Oh yeah,
he is on the receiver's hip, step for step.
And that just boggles my mind. You know, him being in Mississippi, that neither of the SEC schools over there,
he's not tall enough,
gave him a look. I mean, or heck, even Southern Miss for that matter. And now
Southern Miss has done a lot of weird things in recruiting lately.
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, now you're talking about Appalachian State and Georgia Southern, which are two programs that know how to recruit. Obviously, they can identify talent. So, I mean, I feel good about recruiting somebody that they're recruiting because they're really good teams. But I think, you know, you're talking about the defensive backs, but going back to last year and now this year, look at those defensive ends. I mean, Joe Sloan went and got two very good ones out of Baton Rouge last year. And now you've
and
got
one redshirted.
Yeah, and so now you got Turner committed and then potentially TJ King coming back into the fold. I mean, that's going to be sick. So I'm really excited about that position going back to last year. And just loads of talent, loads of depth all over the defense. It's going to be exciting to see who can step up and play right away and who's going to be, you know, maybe starting by maybe not 2015, but 2016. There'll be some starting spots to be had.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, let's which class is this better than? It's better than a lot of them in recent memory. And Tech has loaded up on three stars in the past, and we've gone over it ad nauseum of why there's not as many three stars as in the past. But let's compare this class to past classes after the break. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can text your questions. Excuse me, not text. Email, tweet, whatever, what have you. Email your questions to radio at bleedtechblue.com. Tweet your questions with the hashtag BTBRadio.
Hey, Jay Ford, I've got a comment. You know, I was driving in and you were talking to Mark Kramer, and he mentioned the bowl game. And did we think there would be a pickup in Dallas recruiting? And, you know, maybe there will be next year, but obviously this class was pretty much full. But I've kind of noticed back 10, 12 years ago, Coach Bicknell had some coaches that recruited down in the Houston area a lot. And then the last probably 8 to 10 years, you haven't seen that as much. Dooley and Dykes were both heavily into Dallas and obviously East Texas and Louisiana. But I've noticed this year T.J. King might be the only Dallas area kid that committed. They offered a few others, but they're back into Houston now. And also
– Blake Baker's got such inroads down there.
Yeah, and then also Oscar Giles. And so then you've got Houston and Orange, which is – basically in Louisiana right there. That seems to be a new hot spot for Tech, and they're kind of getting away from Dallas back into Houston, which might be good because everybody seems to recruit Dallas, and maybe Houston's a little further south. Maybe it's still a hotbed for recruiting, but maybe it's a little easier to find talent and fend off some of these bigger schools.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Let's go to the Keller Williams Paris Wide Partners hotline to our good buddy Rafe. Rafe, what's going on, my man?
Hey, man, I'm outside of the restaurant here in Bossier. You know, there's this Air Force base over there. And that plane flew by. I don't want to have the worst radio segment in the history of Lead Tech Group Blue Radio.
Because we've had a couple of bad ones, so you can't.
Yeah, I mean, I could top it. You know, if a big, loud bomber flies over and I'm trying to mumble underneath that.
Yeah, B-52 would kind of muffle things.
Yeah, man. How y'all doing?
All right, man.
Hey, dude, y'all want to talk basketball or football? Because
Either one.
The basketball, was revealed this past week in basketball to me is really important going forward this season because, I mean, you told me before the season that Holden was a guy that was going to contribute, and he kind of got buried on the bench and for whatever reasons. But, I mean, I've watched that game not only in person, but I've watched it twice since then.
You're a freak.
That's sad, isn't it, to me? But I have. I actually watched it twice. And his contribution, the way that that he plays offensively and the way he can rebound defensively and you know, shot-blocking abilities and the way he moves, I think he's a kind of a season changer as far as what we can accomplish. And because we were really struggling to figure out what we could do with Kaiser on the bench and how we could give him a break, but he looks like the guy.
What I said before the year is that Merle Holden had the most upside of anybody on the team, and I don't think I expected him to mature as quickly as he has. And I don't think that Mike really thought that he had matured as much as he had. He just has had a couple of good practices, he said in the post game, but you don't know if those good practices are going to translate to a game. Jason's a former post player at the high school level, but he also did some things with the Lady Texters in college. Jason, how hard is it to make that transition?
Well, it's just the physicality of it is the most shocking thing. I mean,
Jared's laughing at me.
Hey, I was on the practice team the last time they went to the championship game. So.
You're one.
It's just funny that you're talking about physicality as a post player and you worked with the ladies.
Hey, I promise you, you go play with Amanda Wilson and Elisa Burris, they will put you on your butt and break your nose.
But yeah, Amanda Wilson is
I promise.
I won't tell this. Yeah, I will.
Go ahead.
She's really good friends with a friend of mine, and she went to go pick Amanda up one time whenever she was still in high school at Evangel, and this person said something inappropriate. He was a male, said something inappropriate to this girl who's a friend of mine, and Amanda Wilson punched him in the face and knocked him out. Straight up man punched him, and that's a true story. So Jason, you know,
real life.
this is real talk right here.
Hey, she's
I've seen her recently. She's kind of slimmed down, but at that time she was I would want her on my side in a
But Jason, about the physicality, and that's something that he responded to well, I thought, Saturday.
Yeah, and Holden's probably used to being the most athletic, biggest kid in the game, and so now he's going out there playing against a bunch of guys his own size, but Tech needed that. They've been playing a lot of four-guard lineups when McCree goes to the bench, and McCree's basically just a really big guard, especially on offense. I did see him get a couple of really tough rebounds in that game. He's getting in there and fighting harder, and I noticed even before this game with Holden, the team was finally winning some rebounding battles. So now you throw Holden into the mix, you've got a true backup power forward now. You're not just playing four guards, and it opens up so many possibilities. You can still go small, you know, when Stapleton moves into the fourth guard spot, or maybe even when Kedar Davis comes back, you can still go small if you need to, but now you don't have to. You can play holding at the four. And heck, like you said, Jay Ford, whenever Kizer goes to the bench, if you don't want to play one of your big freshmen, if they're not a good matchup, you can play Holden at the five.
But why not even play Holden at the – leave Holden at the five and put Kizer at the four?
See, that's what I don't understand is why don't you go ahead and give that lineup a try? Because you're not going to get any more athletic than Mike. It's not
and
as
not
though
– either. Holden
yes, is – and Mike had six blocks, but Holden had three in 14 minutes, and he had some really difficult boards, and he was 2 for 3 from the field. So
I don't. Yeah, and he's got a pretty solid base. You know, he kind of holds his ground. Whereas
absolutely,
Mike is a little thinner, you know, from waist down than Holden is. So yeah, and then the other thing is Griffin. I guess with Kedar being down right now, Griffin getting a chance to play, not the point. I thought that. He looked. There's that airplane. He looked a lot more comfortable in there without all the pressure on him to run the offense and handle the ball and things like that. And he can shoot too. So I'm excited to see. I mean, and the obvious is McCree. I mean, McCree is a legit, you know, double-digit scorer every night. He is a matchup problem, and he's just a good player. So.
And yeah, we noticed too last, you know, with the last set of junior college players that came in a couple of years ago, it took about till January for Anderson and Johnson to kind of start making an impact. And I think McCree, although he did make an impact in the first half of the year, now he's really coming on and replacing that half-court matchup nightmare that Chris Anderson was.
And Mike said in his press conference the Monday before, or a week ago, before the UAB and Middle Tennessee games, he said that the biggest difference in Eric when conference play started was that he understood that he had no choice but to play defense. He said that it clicked with Eric that he had to play defense or he wasn't going to be able to play. And so he started giving more on the defensive side of the ball, and that's when everything else opened up for him. I think Eric is as talented as he wants. I mean, he's as good as he wants to be. He is a very talented athlete. But I think one of my, I guess, always biggest criticisms of Mike Kizer was that every time he gets the ball, he puts it on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Merrill Holden did not do that Saturday. When Merrill got the ball, he played like a big man. When he got under the goal, he kept it and went up strong with it. And I think that was the biggest difference to me as far as maybe the reason why you might give Holden a shot at the five, let Mike play at the four, is because Holden looked like he could play the position.
Yeah, I think if you put him on the court together, it doesn't matter what position you call him. Holden's going to be one type of player, and Kizer is going to do what Kizer does. He's going to block shots mostly. But you're right, on offense, if he would go straight back up, he's over a 70% free throw shooter. He will draw some fouls. So he could be a little more effective on offense if he would go straight back up.
Rafe, we really appreciate you, my man.
All right, man. Take care. Thank you.
Avoid those airplanes.
Well, hey, J4, before we get out of here, or before I get out of here,
let's go back to the comparing the classes.
Yeah, you were mentioning, does this class rank up with some of these other ones that they've had? And there was a good one, I can't remember what year, 2000 or so, whenever Luke McCown's class came in, a lot of good three-year starters in that class. Had to dig back in the old archives, probably in the old kind of computers, I forgot what you call it, but anyway, forget that.
The mainframes.
Yeah. 2008, I think, was a really good class when they had like 9 kids from southeastern Louisiana, a lot of big-time talent, a lot of guys that started for multiple years, NFL player in Jordan Mills. That's probably – and that's when Dooley came in, and his first class – he had just gotten here, had to take some chances on some really grade risk kids and some character questionable kids. And he got a couple of good players in that 07 class, but that 08 class.
Yeah, you know, you said 08 right as the break began, so I pulled it up. Colby Cameron, Richie Casey, Adrian Cole, Solomon Randall, Kevin Saya, Chandler Spence, R.P. Stewart, Christian, I think I said Christian Lacey, Kwame Jordan, who contributed for 2 years, I think you're onto something. That probably
Rufus Porter, Kendrick Jackson, or Kendrick James.
No,
they were 2009.
Yeah,
2009 had Jordan Mills.
Okay, well that's the one I'm thinking of.
Rufus Porter, Matt Shepard, Tyrone Duplessis, Justin Ellis, IK Inampali, had Chad Boyd,
Javonte Crowe. Yeah.
So were Jordan Mills and Justin Ellis in the same class?
They were.
Okay, so that's your two NFL players right there. The 09 was the one I think about. Had all the New Orleans kids.
And then Matt Shepard was in that class, too.
Yeah, he and Vince Cato were both – or Kano were two offensive linemen there from East Texas. And I think we kind of got –
C.J. Broaddus.
Kind of got away from East Texas. You know, Petey Payro used to recruit that area. You've got a lot of Tech alums coaching in East Texas. But, you know, maybe with the new offensive line coach being a head coach and a longtime assistant at Stephen F. Austin, he's got a lot of East Texas connections.
That's true.
You might see Tech getting back in East Texas a little bit.
So 08 and 09 is probably the last time Tech's seen a class. I mean, we're projecting right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're guessing, but, you know, and that coincides with the fact that 10, 11, 12, Dykes went heavy JUCO, a lot of California junior college players. And obviously they hit some big-time hits with, like, Quentin Patton, Miles White, and some other really good quality players. But as far as depth overall talent, I would say this class is the best one since, you know, 5 years ago.
Appreciate you coming on for a half hour.
Anytime.
Jet, appreciate you letting us have your dad while you played on the floor.
So no problem.
This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We had Coach Holtz on the line. Looks like we've lost him. We'll try to get him back on the phone. Jared, a couple of sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to us at radio@bleedtechblue.com, or you can tweet us with your questions with the hashtag BTB Radio.
Of course, Coach Holtz has hired a defensive coordinator and a defensive line coach. The one coach remaining to be hired is a safeties coach. It may be a little while before they do that one, just because they're in the nitty-gritty of recruiting. We do have Coach Holtz on the phone now. Coach, appreciate you joining us.
I'm glad I could be here. Let me get you off this. There you go. Better?
That's much better.
I'm glad I could join you. Glad we could be together. Everything going okay for y'all?
It's going great. Appreciate you. You know, I don't know if you can comment on this yet or not, Coach. Can you comment on your two new hires?
Yes, certainly. Robert McFarland is when Coach Moore left. I was looking for someone with a lot of experience. When you look at the offensive line and one of the areas where we feel like we really can make huge strides from last year to next year, I felt like experience was really important, and Robert he definitely brings plenty of that. Coach McFarland has been a head coach at Stephen F. Austin. He's been a coordinator in the Big 12. He was a coordinator at Central Florida, and I feel really lucky to get him with the experience that he has. He was a graduate assistant in 1990 at Notre Dame when we worked together, and so I've always had a very high opinion of him, and really fortunate that we were able to lure him here to Louisiana Tech. And then just most recently, with the departure of Oscar Giles, with him leaving, same thing. I felt like I needed to bring experience in at the defensive line. When you look at guys like Montarius Dora and Vernon Butler, guys that have played the position, that have been there quite a while going into their senior year, it's always hard to have a new coach, but I felt like somebody with a lot of experience, and when you look at Rick Petrie and what he's done and the success that he's had, I couldn't be happier to have both of them join our staff, and I think they'll both bring an awful lot from an experience standpoint.
Coach, go through how you make your hires. I mean, it seems like you're a real patient guy in the process, and you don't leave any stone unturned. How do you go about the process of searching through all the coaching candidates and come up with the right one?
Well, when you sit down, you obviously when you first find out that you have a position open, you have to sit down and say, what do we really need? What do we need as a staff? Do we need experience? Do we need youth? Do we need a recruiter? Do we need a position coach? Do we need a coordinator? And then you really start to look to find the right fit, the right fit for the staff, the right fit for the team that you have coming back. Just like with Blake Baker, trying to promote Blake Baker to defensive coordinator, all came from a trust factor that being around him and seeing his energy and his knowledge of the game. But B, I felt like it was really important for our players that have had an awful lot of success in this defensive system, and they have had this for they've had three coordinators in 3 years, and I didn't want to bring a new terminology in. And so I think you have to look at really what you need in the fit. To me, the fit is more important than the resume. And I guess a lot of this comes from doing this now for about 17 years and hiring coaches, and I've come a long way from when I was 29 years old trying to hire my first staff. And it's like anything, experience comes with making a lot of mistakes. And so I have been very fortunate to work with some great coaches and to be involved in this business as long as I have, with a lot of connections. But I think you always have a secondary list at every position on guys that you would be interested in bringing onto your staff if you were to have an opening.
And then talk about the reception that your recruits have had with your two new position coaches on the recruiting trail.
I think it's been very positive. As I said, both of them are very seasoned coaches that have been around for a long time and coached a lot of players. You look at Rick Petrie, and when he starts talking about the number of places that he's coached with almost 20 years experience in the Southeast Conference and sending 37 players to the National Football League, I think he comes in with some automatic credibility. And then the same is true with Robert McFarland. And I think the response has been very positive. I think when you get into recruiting is very time sensitive. And so we had to move pretty quick with Oscar Giles, and just very grateful that with the defensive line position. And so just feel very grateful that the university was willing to work with us and be able to make some of this happen so we could get him in front of some of the recruits.
So I'm sure it took some creativity to get Coach Petrie on campus as quickly as you did.
It did. It definitely did. But I felt like it was really important. We had a really big weekend last weekend and had 20 recruits on campus, and felt like with the number of offensive and defensive linemen that we had on campus, it was really important that we had an offensive and defensive line coach here so they would have the opportunity to spend that 48 hours on campus with those gentlemen and get to know them a little bit better and feel a little bit more comfortable. So when they went home, they knew, you know what, I've met my position coach. I'm making this commitment to the university because I feel like I can go there, I can graduate, I can excel in the classroom, excel on the football field. And I think just having that personal contact with the position coach was really important.
And then switching gears to a transfer quarterback of Jeff Driscoll, go through the process of how that kind of thing comes about. Do you get tipped off by a high school coach from Florida that it's about to happen? How does it all happen?
A lot of times it goes through that. I think this one was probably a little bit different because Jeff had made the decision that he was going to leave Florida, and he had sent out some letters from their compliance office to have permission to talk to a couple schools, and we were one of the schools when we got that letter. And as soon as I got that letter giving us permission to talk to them, I picked up the phone and called them and just started talking a little bit about this school, this team, what we felt like he could bring to the table and why we were really excited about it. And we've been fortunate enough now to have the chance to sit down with him in person a couple times and meet with him and talk with his parents. And just a really, really special young man.
Everybody talks about how good of a person he is. And as your quarterback and in that quarterback room, how important is that?
I think it's very important, as we saw with Cody Sokol, just the difference that makes. And you know, you never know until you can get everybody together. But I definitely think that was one of the things that attracted us with an upperclassman transfer. When you look at what we have at quarterback coming back next year, you've got Ryan Higgins is going to be a junior, and you have two freshmen that redshirted this year. And I just, you know, look at Ohio State, who played three quarterbacks this year. This was definitely not a a knock on Ryan Higgins or Price Wilson or Alex Woodall. I think they are very, very talented quarterbacks and are going to be very good and going to have great careers here at Louisiana Tech. I felt like it was really important that we develop depth on this football team with what we were trying to develop at the quarterback position, and that's why we made the decision that we did.
Coach, I really appreciate you making time for us here during your two visits this evening. I hope they go well, and wish you all the luck.
Well, I appreciate it very much, Jonathan. Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
Thanks, Skip.
Thanks, Coach.
Appreciate it.
Skip Holtz, head coach of the Louisiana Tech Bulldog football team, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio in between two in-home visits for potential recruits.
That time of the year, isn't it?
He was on the road.
Yeah, and, you know, I think really, and he mentioned it, that's the reason why they moved so quickly with Petrie, getting him in, you know, obviously, and we had mentioned this last week, the defensive line coach was going to be the priority just because of the recruiting standpoint, because those who are being recruited by the safeties coach, well, the safeties coach is still there. He's under a different title now, but he's the same face going to meet the same players. Defensive line coach, those guys who Oscar Giles had been certainly meeting with and communicating with, had relationships with, getting Petrie in front of them was certainly the priority.
And the mold that I see the safeties coach being in will probably be maybe of the Blake Baker of a year ago, or a Joe Sloan, a young up and comer that's a relentless recruiter. That's where I see the Bulldogs going with the safeties coach hire. I mean, of course, it could be something else. There's a guy out there, Ron Cooper, who Ron was defensive backs coach at LSU. He's without a job right now. If you can get Ron Cooper, you take him.
Honestly, I think what Skip Holtz has proven with his hires for the past 2 years is that it's hard to predict or project who he's going to get.
Would you ever guessed he would have gotten Rick Petrie?
Well, when I was looking through potential, when I was looking at the potential hires, Petrie was never a guy that came across my radar. And I did not, of course, after I heard that it was Petrie, I looked into him and I was like, oh, well, I should have seen a connection there. He was at Louisiana Tech in 92, all of that stuff. And then McFarland was someone who really didn't come across my radar either. I'm looking through, and McFarland's not a name that came up. And then, of course, in 1990, he's at Notre Dame as a GA, same time as Skip's there. And I think what this has proven is that regardless of whether or not that you believe Skip is a proven X's and O's guy, what he certainly is a football mind, but he's got a great ability to communicate both with fans and with players, with other coaches. He's a face of a program type of guy, and he's got deep connections.
And I think he proved a lot of the naysayers wrong this past
absolutely.
Season with
absolutely.
His X's and O's, calling the shots on offense with an offense that really improved from 1 year to the other with basically the same players. But you're right. His connections are almost limitless.
And I'm sure the last name Holtz goes a long ways too, you know. I mean, undoubtedly so.
And Petrie and he did not overlap at South Carolina. I mean, they've never coached together, but when you've been doing it as long as Petrie graduated from college in 77, he's been coaching since 80, and at the Division I level, your paths are going to cross. The football convention and the coaching fraternity is not real big. There's 124? I don't ever
count. 127?
127 Division I programs.
Correct.
So multiply that by what is there, eight total coaches? There's not that many.
No, it's a tight fraternity. It really is. And, you know, it's not as though Petrie was really advertising that he was going anywhere. He was still the defensive line coach at Duke. He's been in the business for almost 40 years, and when the official announcement came out on January 16th that Petrie was leaving, College Football Talk, NBC Sports, they ran a story that said after nearly 40 years in the business, Duke defensive line coach Rick Petrie is stepping down to pursue other opportunities.
Because that's what the Duke release said.
Yeah, because and then Cutcliffe said, we wish him the best in his future endeavors. Everything sounded as though he was leaving football. But he wasn't. He was just going right down the old road there to Louisiana Tech. And I think he's going to do really well at Tech. I mean, his history has certainly shown that not only does he have the ability to coach these guys up, but at a high level. You got Warren Sapp, Kennard Long,
like four first-round picks.
Yeah, and then there was a kid, Holmes, that played for the Texans not long ago. And then just a couple of years ago, he put another kid in the NFL from Duke at Denver. So
he's been there, done that.
Absolutely.
Let's take this break, last break of the show. On the other side, a little more Bulldog football, and we'll take it home with that. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7, where John Tabor gives you an education on music you've never heard of each week.
No, if they haven't heard of this song, they must be living under a rock.
I've heard this one, but there are songs that he pulls out that people have never heard of.
Well, this is a great song.
This is a good song.
Plus, I Love You, Man. Great movie.
I'm glad you gave context there.
No, this song. You shouldn't have to hear anything except the name of this song and I Love You, Man to connect the dots and know exactly what
you're
talking about.
You had a bad pause after I Love You, Man to make the connection.
I mean, I wasn't saying I Love You,
people,
Man.
People might have Jonathan thought there was Ford. A little man love going on in the studio tonight.
I love
you. He kind of smiled at you there, Jeff. Give you a little wink.
A happily married man to a beautiful woman. And I have no love.
Glad you gave that caveat.
I have no love for Jonathan Ford outside of the show. Okay.
And we digress.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish White Partners. That is red for your information. National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and a Brister Smokehouse. Join us during this last segment on the Keller Williams Parish White Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or you can tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll get to them on the air.
Rafe stole a bit of my thunder about Merle Holden, but we'll continue along those same lines. Saturday's game, Tech's got to get some more production from its bench.
No doubt about it. The bench was another disappointment in Saturday's game outside of Holden. Now, I know Kedar Davis was down, a torn meniscus, had surgery on it. I'm not sure how long that'll keep him out. I've read everything from 4 to 6 weeks to 8 to 10 weeks to 12 weeks. But regardless, Kedar's at least out for a little while, which puts more on Xavier Stapleton. But it gave Deion Griffin a chance to get into a game.
And played really well.
And he played well. And so one thing that you can take away from Saturday's game, outside of Holden's performance, obviously, was the play of Deion Griffin.
I thought that they were putting Deion in to try to get him a three. Because he's a good three-point shooter as well. And Xavier Stapleton and Boykins were cold as ice Saturday. But they never got him a clean look at a three. That's really what I thought he was going in for. But he was very good defensively. He didn't handle the ball a ton, which he was brought in to be a point guard. But when you've got Alex Hamilton and Speedy Smith on your team, one of them's going to be on the floor pretty much all the time. So they're going to be your point guard. But I don't think enough could be said about Deion Griffin and Merle Holden's play.
Sure. And also, Speedy played 37 minutes on Saturday. Raheem played 37 minutes Saturday. Alex played 36 minutes. That's not what you want if you're Mike. And obviously this one was close up and, was fairly close up until about, 6 minutes left. So I understand maybe why you leave some of those guys in. Actually, Speedy fouled out of that game. But you don't want to keep playing them in conference play 37 minutes, 36 minutes, 35 minutes. You'd like to be able to get more production off of your bench. And Deion Griffin goes from really not playing to doubling the time of Jacoby Boykins or Xavier Stapleton. Because like you said, both of them just came out ice cold and really never picked it up. And then talking about a team Saturday. You know, a lot of people talk about whether that they live and die by the three, and to an extent, you know, they do shoot the three ball a lot, and it's part of their offense. They only shot 13 Saturday because Alex Hamilton was being able to get to the free throw line so much. He made 20 free throws, 20 of 23. It's a new Tech record, one away from the conference record. So we can kind of shut down some of the stuff about how bad of a free throw shooting team they are. Since conference play has picked up, they've shot very well from the free throw line. But also, Raheem Appleby made three three-pointers, and those were the only three That was the only three threes that they made the whole game. They went 3 of 13, and all three came from Raheem. And that was really the most of his production.
The biggest thing that I take away from these games that Tech has won in ugly fashion is that they're winning games in a different way. And that's big time.
And almost every night they're having to win a game a different way. With Southern Miss, they won with three-point shooting. Against UTEP, they won with defense. Against UTSA, and UTEP was a little bit of free throw shooting too. And then against UTSA, they had to change it up again. UAB the other night, last Thursday night, UAB shot the ball really well. They shot the three ball well, and Louisiana Tech was able to answer and out-rebound them. And then you got the Middle Tennessee game where, once again, you're getting production from yet a different player. And 13 threes for Louisiana Tech is really out of character because they usually shoot more threes than that. But whenever you're able
30.
To get – Yeah. So when you're able to get Alex Hamilton to the free throw line as much as he was able to, and then you've got – he went 5 of 9.
You know, I ask myself this. If I'm a college basketball coach and I'm playing against Alex Hamilton, I don't know if I'm ever playing a man-to-man defense with him on the floor.
And you would think because he's a lefty, maybe you could try to make him go right. But he finished around the rim numerous times both Thursday and Saturday with his right hand.
He doesn't care what hand he's using.
No, he really doesn't. He's done a really good – and but last year, even last year to an extent, maybe before Raheem went down, you could still try to force Alex to go right, and he wasn't as effective as he has been so far this season.
Yeah, you know, but you look at him against man-to-man defenses – and he's basically unstoppable. He's the and-one machine. If that was an official stat, I can't imagine anybody in the country having more and-ones than Alex Hamilton. But then you look at against the zone defense, and he's almost completely shut down.
True. That is true. Thankfully, he has the ability to handle the basketball as well. And he's a pretty dang good at it.
Yeah, he is. And he's gotten a whole lot better from his freshman year.
Of course, so he's able to find other looks and stuff when that happens. You know, something else is that because they've been being out-rebounded as much as they have, and because the front court with Mike and then Eric and then maybe sometimes Jonaya and then sometimes Leo, but regardless, none of them have been able to really effectively rebound the basketball, at least at the clip that you would like. They've been doing a lot of bringing the guards down to try to rebound, and Alex Hamilton has done a good job this season of rebounding as well and had another 6 Saturday.
Yeah, the Bulldogs, like we said to open up this segment, is they've got to get some more production from their bench if they want to continue this streak. But this week they should have a little bit easier of a time going on the road to North Texas and Rice. Now they got to show up. I mean, they're not to the point where they can just roll the ball out and get a victory. But you got to feel good about Tech continuing their undefeated conference streak with these two this weekend, one at North Texas and one at Rice, and then to looking ahead, because that's what we can do on the radio, to next Thursday's matchup against Western Kentucky and Ruston could be absolutely huge if Western Kentucky continues their winning ways.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Western Kentucky was able to get a big victory over Old Dominion, they had one loss when they were going into that game. Western Kentucky loss gave them two. Now,
Old Dominion beat them 61-50.
Beat North Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
Old Dominion beat them.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you said North Texas beat Old Dominion.
Oh, No. Although North Texas did play them closely, but Old Dominion has played really well, and Western Kentucky was able to beat them. Now, I think that, first of all, I don't think that Middle Tennessee State team is as good as it was last year.
But defensively, they're really good.
And they're very fast.
Yeah.
That's a fast team. I'm not sold on Western Kentucky. They do have a good win against Old Dominion. I'm still not sold on Western Kentucky. I am sold on Old Dominion. They can beat you in more ways than one. And I think Old Dominion and the Western Kentucky game next week will be a big game.
If Tech can somehow harness their second half defensive effort from the UTEP game, they went out.
I could see that. I could see them. I could see Tech winning out the way they're playing right now, regardless. Once you get past Old Dominion, Western Kentucky, and maybe to an extent Charlotte, there's no one else really in the conference that you're – I mean, except for UTEP. There's one more game with UTEP, but outside of that –
it's at home.
Exactly. You have it at home. And so ultimately, I think they've got a really good shot.
So Thursday, I'm looking at your screen. Thursday, UTEP plays Western Kentucky. That'll be a really good game.
Right. That'll be a good one. Both of them are sitting at 12-5. Western Kentucky, of course, has victories over Charlotte and Old Dominion already in conference play. Beat both of the Florida schools, FAU 88-85, FIU 65-58. But UTEP, Thursday night at home, will be a good game. Of course, then they host UTSA before they travel to Tech Thursday the 29th.
Well, that about does it. Come to BleedTechBlue.com for all the latest Louisiana Tech news. We have broken the last two hires.
Yeah, it's fun to look at the newspaper and see that as first reported by BleedTechBlue.com. So,
and of course the recruiting covers, nobody else does it like we do it. And if you didn't catch the whole show, if you want to listen to Coach Holtz's interview again, find us on SoundCloud or iTunes for the podcast. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll be back same time next week. See you then.
Been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN 97.7.